But you know right now, if you try to play me off, I'm going to Jennifer Coolidge. I do not care.
Yeah. See, but this is why, you know, I need to bring on highbrow people because I'm a very... I just told you how much I love the Waffle House.
Hello there, and welcome to Pink Milk, where we serve Star Wars queerly. I am your host, Brian, and you are about to step into some clips from our latest live stream, where you can check us out talking all things Star Wars every Wednesday evening, 9 p.m. East, right here on the YouTubes. Unless you're listening to this on a podcatcher, then you can't see us there, but you can head over to YouTube every Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Check us out. It's a great time. It's a great time. Just like this week was. We had our friend, our dear friend of the show, Ben, join us for some great talk on Episode 3 of The Mandalorian. However, this podcast is mostly focusing on some speculation station trains that we jumped on. We had a really, really good time talking about Coruscant versus Hosnian Prime, who is a liar, and what the sequel trilogies could have possibly been like had they done a few things differently. So I'm really excited for you to listen to this episode. It's chock-filled with lots of laughs and lots of good times. But instead of me talking here to you now, let's go ahead and get into this thing, and I will see you as soon as it's over. Let's drink up.
I think for me, and this will segue into, I want to hear about your Mando versus Andor. But for me, I think I've made it very clear. I loved Andor. It was perfection. It did it like I have no notes for that show. But it wasn't necessarily the Star Wars that I come back for all the time. That is not mm-hmm. a negative towards Andor. It's just my personal taste level. Mm-hmm. So I loved seeing similar conversations, like the rich people, they're like, I can't even remember if I was going to be a rebel or an imperial. Like, I just wanted to punch him in the face, like everyone. Like, it was so great, but it was done with camp, where that would not have been done like that in Andor. It would have been much more serious. I think I loved how I'm seeing everyone calling it Dr. Pershing's TED Talk. Like, I loved this idea that the Empire, like, stripped away this hope from him. I loved the joyous music every time we saw Coruscant. It just made me really, really happy to see those things. And it was such a polar opposite of the way Coruscant was portrayed in Andor. I love that. Like, I love it. But for me, this is how I want Star Wars to go into politics. Like, that's what I like. It's still campy. It's still fun. It's playful on top, but underneath that surface is a really layered, textured thing that you can pay attention to if you want to. And if you don't want to pay attention to it, you can just hop on for the ride and look at the two pretty people, and you can leave it there. Whereas Andor really, like, you had to go in. Like, there was no surface to that show. Like, it forced you to be right there, which was great. Again, no notes, but I want to be able, like, I think I said that. I had a hard time escaping into Andor. It was really hard.
Yeah.
Which was perfect for what the show was supposed to do. But Mando is still an escape, and I love it.
I think what Hope says is very important, what Hope just said here. We also need so much about the New Republic on screen to help more casual fans get more of why the sequel trilogy is the way it is. This was a needed episode for that background. I 100%. Literally, about like an hour and a half before we went live, I was actually texting with one of my friends about the episode, and my major feedback to them was, I said, I really feel like these shows are a bridge between the optimism of the original trilogy and the much darker, more sort of cynical, pessimistic world of the sequel trilogy. And yeah. I think that's one of the reasons why, you know, longtime fans had trouble connecting with the sequel trilogy, because they didn't recognize the world. They were like, how is this the world of Star Wars? And I think that, you know, seeing these darker aspects of the New Republic and seeing like all the ways that they're messing up and the ways that they're, you know, just not handling things in the best way really is showing the it's building the bridge between the two worlds, you know, that we saw in
a galaxy
far away.
I like what Brian brings up here too, because I agree. We need to straddle Coruscant and Hosnian Prime. We need to get to Hosnian Prime. Like honestly, honestly, what we need a Galaxy's Edge show. I don't know what you want to call it. Chase, were we talking about this in person or on the stream? I forget. Like, we need that to connect to something. And I know there's going to be people yelling about, but whatever. Like, I think we need one. You know, I think Vi could be that lead character in that show, would be fantastic. But I think we need something like that. And spending a lot of time in Hosnian Prime. We need to get away from Coruscant. As much as we all love to see Coruscant, I think we need to get to know Hosnian Prime to help the sequel trilogy. Because again, instead of setting Rey on Jakku or on Tatooine, they had to make it Jakku. Instead of setting the government on Coruscant because J.J. Abrams knows better, they made it on Hosnian Prime that there was no context to. Like, unfortunately, so now we have to have people do the work that he was too lazy to do.
Brian? It's like poetry.
You know, you have to wonder, like, I mean, it would kind of be interesting to see if in some ways, you know, at some point in the 30 years between the shows that we're getting now and the sequel trilogy, you know, if we got a sense that maybe the New Republic felt like they were corrupt or felt like maybe moving to Hosnian Prime was an attempt at having a fresh start. Mm-hmm. At trying to root out these elements, you know, I think that would be a really interesting story, but it's like too little too late, you know,
because to build on what
I was just gonna say, like, because that is also a lot of this, that is an underpinning theme of the sequel trilogy, is too little too late. It's like, you know, you try, but what you tried doesn't work.
I agree.
Like, just to follow up on that one, because I think it's exactly where my brain was going on it. The theme of the episode does specifically help lead us to Hosnian Prime, if you think about it, because we can tell that the New Republic, they're like our small little rebel heroes, right? We love them. They're plucky. They were very, you know, anarchy in the UK. But the problem is, like, they did overthrow everything and then got left there as, like, 25-year-olds, like, oh, so, like, right now, they are doing the best they can, but it's not working super well. And one of the first things that they are doing is trying to visually rebrand everything. So you'll notice that the perfectly good equipment they didn't want to use because it was Imperial. So I assume eventually the move to Hosnian Prime is just for the optics of differentiating that we're not on Coruscant. We're completely different. And that, like, Coruscant is no longer the center of the galaxy because, like, we're making it here in a more centralized location.
Yeah,
I don't know how the map works. I could be making that last
part up. No, like, the droid said to Pershing in his room. He was like when he was answering the door with the biscuits at the door. Mm-hmm. The droid said something like, you know, Coruscant is named core as in the core of, like, the system, but it's not actually this. So it's like interesting that I think you really are onto something, because they really made sure to, like, if that ends up being the case, they're really foreshadowing to it. And, like, I can see why that line is in there, because it was, like, very deliberate to, like, remind everyone, like, remember, like, they come across as, like, trying to be the core of everything, but it's, like, actually not, you know. So I love that. I love that, Ben. That's so good.
God, this is precisely why I love The Mandalorian. This is precisely why I love these kinds of conversations in Star Wars, because if you don't want to go on into this, you don't have to, and you can just take the show for what it is and have a wild ride, but it's all right there if you want to hop in. And it's like this perfect, perfect bridge, which is why I love Husband and Husband so much, because there is so much room for a super fan and a casual fan to love things equally, just in very different ways. And I love Star Wars. Like, this was like, this fed me my prequel love today. It was like prequels episode. 100%. It was so good. All right, Chase, I'm very excited to hear about Andor versus Mandalorian. We're circling back a little bit, but I want to hear your take because you're always very articulate and say things very well, and I love it.
And it's important to know that we love you, and this is a safe place.
I love you guys. Well, first, I just want to say the reason I asked if you guys all were kind of watching the dynamic between those two characters, specifically through the lens of like the queer charged energy. Like, the reason I asked you all that question is because if you were watching the episode from that perspective, predominantly that perspective, then it's a pretty engaging episode. I kind of like picked up on the queer vibes between them, but it was just like I didn't really fixate on it. I didn't like look for it more. I kind of just like, it was a passing thought. I was like, oh yeah, they seem gay together. And then I just kept watching the show. But because I wasn't watching it from that, I felt like I was just kind of like waiting for something to happen. Like, I loved all the stuff on Coruscant. That was chill as fuck. I loved it. It was so interesting. It was so cool. It was so prequels. But then like once that ended, it was like literally just like the story of these two people just doing, all they had to do was like meet, like tempt, like the temptation to go do the thing, and then it was all a sting operation. Like, that's all that needed to happen. And it's just like, for me, we just spent so much time like waiting, and like, I don't like, Andor's a super slow burn, but for me this wasn't even a burn, it was just slow. Do you know what I mean? Like, yep. Andor for me, like, and listen, I love this episode's fine. Like, I love the Mandalorian, it's whatever. And also, I didn't make a review on it, by the way, because I've been trying to review Mandalorian. But I don't want to review things that I don't like, because I also want to like publicly acknowledge that like just talking shit about something doesn't do anything, because unless I've made a fucking TV show, I shouldn't have its name in my mouth negatively, period. There's like so many things, like so many reasons why things in production, like there's so many ways it can get messed up. And if someone just sees something as messed up, they have no idea what it's like. So anyway, that being said, it might.
Can I add to that real quick?
Yeah, of course.
If you're going to have something negative to say, which is also okay as well, if you want to critique something,
of course,
have some fun with it, and also approach it going, they know more than I do.
Right. 100%. And that's also kind of why I bring
have
up
some camp and fun.
That's why I kind of bring up this idea of like, we're based off of our conversation so far, we've already watched it very different ways, which is like also never addressed when it comes to critique. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I was just kind of watching it and I was getting a lot of that like junior politics I loved. But then like, again, once the Coruscant stuff stopped, it was just sort of like, I knew he was going to eventually do the thing. Like, I was just kind of waiting for them to get to the next beat. That's my only thing. And then for it all to be a sting operation, I'm like, oh my God.
Okay, but can I talk about why I think it was important to focus on Dr. Pershing for so long?
Yeah, listen, wait. Yeah, really quickly though, before you start though, I'm not saying that the story they weren't telling wasn't interesting. I'm making a critique on the writing. For me, the writing was just like really just sort of like rudimentary and slow compared to something like Andor, which is super, super sophisticated, like language. So I mean, it's like a play.
Put a pin in that, and I'll get to that in just a second.
Right. And I'm just saying it's not my preference, and I'm not saying this. I'm saying everything they talked about was important. No. It was cool. It was interesting. It just like, you know, it just was a little bit lolly for me.
Yep. And M, because I think you're about to do exactly what Crystal here says, which I love. And this is something that I really, 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 really love and appreciate that we can do on this show. But I love hearing why people like something I don't. Like, did I miss something? 100%. I make the jokes all the time. Like, I'm going to say Dave Matthews Band because I'm a 90s kid. Like, I don't get Dave Matthews Band, not into them. Pearl Jam, never got it. I wish I was in that camp because people seem to be having so much fun. People seem to have so much fun over there, but I don't get it. I don't get it. So like, I'm always wanting to hop on the hype train. Like, you know, I have more fun enjoying something than not enjoying something. If I don't enjoy something, I just stop watching because it's unhealthy for me to constantly hate on things. But go ahead, Em. Let's hear about Dr. Pershing.
So I think it was really important for this episode to be very slow paced and understated, like in Pershing's story, because we had to follow his journey of and really bear close witness to his good intentions and his his goodwill, you know, being twisted into making poor decisions. And I think it also was like we had to go on that journey in order not only to understand Dr. Pershing, but also as a foil to Elia, because like when you see the end and you realize what has happened, even when you see when you witness the sting, you realize that Elia took the same journey that Pershing did, just coming to a different conclusion. And so it's a way of showing you not only Pershing's story of being a citizen of the New Republic, taking advantage of amnesty, and yet still trying to have his way and trying to meddle in things that might be dangerous or might be wrongheaded. But all you witness not only Dr. Pershing's journey towards that, but you're also kind of getting insight into what Elia has done by becoming a mole. Yep. And serving the imperial interests. And I just think that, well, like from a story perspective,
she's serving the imperials yet.
Well, I kind of think she is. I mean,
I'm sure she is, but we don't know.
I would be very surprised if she's not. I mean, I would be very surprised if she didn't scramble Pershing's brain in order to serve the interests of the empire. I feel like the quietness and the way that it's got this sort of slow creeping foreboding where you're sort of forced to live through each step, each choice, each shift in motivations, if like that is an emotional experience that is a very intentional part of the story. So that's my perspective on it. That was how I experienced it. It's kind of like you're watching it and it's like watching a slow motion car crash, and you're kind of like got this like sinking feeling in your stomach as it's happening.
Yep.
And that's kind of like, so I kind of, that was why I felt like that very slow, understated pacing was important to the story, because it's supposed to take you on this emotional journey that not only is you're being carried along and sympathizing with Pershing, but by the end, you kind of understand like, oh, okay, this is an emotional journey that's being taken by not just well-meaning people who are part of the amnesty program. It's being undertaken by everyone.
100%.
Yeah. 100%. And like, just to pull my pen from a little bit earlier, just going to air my opinion on this really quick, because I think these are two complementary things that are doing different purposes. So for example, Andor is very high political intrigue, which is like, I want Star Wars West rank. So it's right up there for me. I love that. This particular episode is involved in the politosphere, but it's much more about what that looks like for actual people. So in Andor, we're seeing either people at the very top of the food chain, we're following Mon Mothma around, or we're watching people on the ground in the beginnings of a rebellion. When we move to this episode, we're seeing what happens to people because of the actions of the heroes that we've been following. So people who really don't have any control, like Dr. Pershing in this instance, what do you do with these people? You've got billions of people who serve for an empire. A lot of them are just people. How do you differentiate which ones were radicalized? How do you differentiate which ones are perfectly fine? Like, is the amnesty program the correct way to go about it? If it's not, what's the other alternative? Like, it's a very small story. And in order to kind of counterbalance the larger story, it allows us to pause and then move in to a place where we don't normally go in Star Wars, which is people who are not moving huge galactic policies. Like, this is just a guy who's got a new apartment and he's trying to do better for himself because he wanted to be a good scientist. Even if his speech was a little bit Elizabeth Holmes for me, like, it was at first I thought I was going to try to sell a pill. But after that, he seems like a very sweet, nice, soft kid who just got wrapped up in a bunch of stuff. And at the end of the day, just got fucked all the way through. There was nothing he could have done. And then also for someone who's a huge Claudia Gray fan, this felt very Claudia Gray to me.
Oh, this episode felt ripped right out of Bloodline. Like 100%. It was so good. It was so good. Okay, real quick, before we get into thoughts and predictions for where the show may be going. Will here says, I think we really need to follow up the Blade Runner, Kiki, with a viewing of Terry Gilliam's Brazil. So I may or may not have had a little DM chat today with someone who may or may not have been in today's episode. I'm not putting anything out there, but this episode was based off of that film, apparently. I have not seen it, but I cannot wait to see it because I think this potentially may not have had the biggest like zingers and whoopee yow yays and no Cobb Vance, but it might be my favorite episode of The Mandalorian we've ever had. It literally has not left my brain today. Like it was like, it was just like this fed me the perfect blend of the prequels meets the OT and sprinkled in all the goodness that's going to make me absolutely fall in love with the sequel trilogy in like the next 2 years, because there are so many, I will say it to the sun's stock coming up. I love the characters from the sequel trilogy so much. I do not dislike the sequel trilogy because I love those characters so much. I just think the sequel trilogy wanted to be radically different, and so they ignored a lot of things that could have very, like Hosnian Prime, you could have just made it on Coruscant and it would have helped fill in certain things. We would have been able to pull at heartstrings more than we would have. But we're going to get there. We're going to get there with extra stuff. So I'm here for it. I'm very excited. Before we get into predictions, I do want to ask one thing, because it would be, my gay heart would be very excited. Ben just brought up Mon Mothma, and what if we get Mon Mothma in the show?
That'd be everything.
It's definitely a possibility. Honestly, to follow up with the tone of this episode, I would really like to have her incorporated, but not where we're directly interacting with her, but to see how people, for example, in the Amnesty program feel compared to this person who's on the screen saying, like, we're doing the best that we possibly can, and like, we've given you whole new lives and opportunities, and we're not the Empire. Like, what that actually feels like when you're at the very base of it, being like, I don't have a name, I have a number, and I've got a rank, and I've got a uniform, and I've got an insignia. It seems pretty much like the same to me.
Yep. To quote Chase's very brave statement from a few chats ago, when Chase claimed that Beyonce has no business speaking for the common person because she's Beyonce and doesn't understand what it is, which I was here for. Loved it. Also, way to go. Very brave. Brave person. I feel that way about the Mothmas, both Vel and Mon. Like, they have no real understanding of what it's like. Like, I think they're good and perfect and they're doing the best they can, but they don't know. They don't know. They have no idea. You know, they're not the dude going, which one was I going to be in? Can you imagine? They're not that. But they don't know.
They're well-intended and they're trying to stay informed. But a major family drama for them is like whether or not their daughter wants to braid her hair and join a religion. Uh-huh. Like they had like
they're solid like people.
First world problems, okay?
Yes.
Like there are other people who are just trying to eat like ration biscuits. And meanwhile, like Mon Mothma is genuinely putting her life on the line for a greater cause, but at the end of the day, it's like she's going from one air conditioned room to another air conditioned room. So, like, no matter what happens in this situation, she's going to be okay.
She has so much money that her house is minimal.
Oh, like, yeah.
I don't need anything in it because I have so much that I don't need to have anything here. Mm-hmm. Or you go to Saw Gerrera's house and there's like everything everywhere all at once.
Saw Gerrera does not have a house. He has a long-term rental that he does not take care about. He doesn't call the landlord, and he does not plan on getting his deposit back.
Yep, exactly. The man's never seen a carpet steamer in his life.
No. He's one of those that every time that he moves out of a place, the landlord is like, what did you do?
Yes. Like,
there was a door here. Now there is not. How do you make a door go away? I've heard of putting a hole in the wall. How do you put it out?
Speaking of a hole in the wall. He has like
squirrels in the attic energy.
And not only that, but he radicalized the squirrels, which is really awkward when you're trying to get the neighborhood back together.
He's like some mutant squirrel from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Holes in the wall. That gigantic alien there on the subway train. Oh,
so good.
He's so happy. He's just sitting there. He's like, he probably did where Chase did one edible before the stream. That dude probably did two or three edibles before he hopped on that train. He's like, hey.
Wow. I love him. He's the best. Those guys had a long day at work. He worked a 10-hour shift. Those guys
are skipping trains. Oh, whoa. Do you think those droids are going after them? Man, I don't know. I hope they can run fast enough. Whoa. Did I just hear that they like actually jumped off the train? I hope they landed on something soft. I'm kind of hungry right now. Do you think this train stops? Do you think this train stops at a milkshake shack? Like, hamburger sounds really good right now.
And it all comes back to Waffle House.
Man. Oh, no.
Maybe I'll see them at a Waffle House after this. I wonder probably. Okay. Do you think they're hungry?
Well, he could probably go ask them because they had to walk through like 6 different train cars to actually get where they're going.
100%. Okay.
And I love how they made the days of the week in Galactic Standard Calendar.
Oh my God, I loved it.
Canon, that was so great.
Can I tell you the way that I made the most obnoxious shrill noise?
Except for Bendu Day was weird.
That was the one.
I agree.
It was like Happy Bendu Day. I thought it was like a holiday or something. And then when I realized it was supposed to be a day of the week, it made it even better because that means that the idea of the Bendu is like so ingrained.
But no one knows who Bendu is.
But here's the thing. Do you know why it's called Thor's Day? Like, in general, you're like, it's Tuesday. Do you know why? Most people don't. That's how that thing starts, is it just gets rolled over and rolled over and rolled over. The Bendu is part of like a cultural consciousness from so far back that people don't even know that they're referencing him every Friday.
Yes.
Love See, it. I do more than just.
Oh my God, Chase just became that guy on the subway train. Oh,
yeah,
I love that. It's smart.
And edible just kicked in. By the way,
and you know the thing. Well, it would be interesting for like some nerd to tell us if they named the days of the week before or after the creation of the being Bendu, because for all we know, Bendu was named after Bendu Day. You know,
Pablo Hidalgo, a tweet's coming your way.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Hold. Okay, new topic. How was that from subtle?
It was good. Your last really echoey for me, though, is that it's just being transitioned from part the music.
Part of the audio echoes it. It was kind of foreboding.
It was honestly haunting.
Like haunted house, yes.
It really was.
I was going to be like, man, they really did cut corners on that Haunted Mansion movie after all.
That I'm the Bendu.
You sounded like something.
Yeah, Wadawanga. That was just for Chase. Okay. I would like some predictions for where the show is going. So I'm going to ask all of you. This was unplanned, but whatevs, you know.
Surprise.
Okay.
This show not going on surprise. Schedule? I can't imagine.
I know. Okay. Who is Aliyah working for?
Her boss.
Okay. Wow. Thank you. This is why we're bringing you on. Very deep thoughts with Ben. Okay. No, Ben, who is her boss?
So here's the thing. I try to make a rule of not getting overly speculative on the internet about Star Wars.
Okay, we're going to speculate responsibly.
I will responsibly speculate here. In all honesty, it makes more sense for it to be Moff Gideon because, like, Occam's Razor, but also Jon Favreau is working on the show. So I'm assuming it won't be Moff Gideon. It will be something else. I do not think it's going to be Thrawn. Because I think that would be getting over into Dave's toy box and he's not sharing right now. So hopefully it's not related to that in any way, shape, or form. But I would assume it's something that is involved in the Empire proto First Order. It could just be Gideon. You know, simplest answer tends to be true. But my guess off the top of my head in speculation is that Jon Favreau is going to assume that we think that it's going to be her boss because that's the last person, so they'll choose someone else.
Yeah. Also, just to go step back real quick, because I like Drunk Alex here. I think Bendu Day precedes the vendor creature, but they both come from the Jedi Bendu. But don't trust me, Molly gave me too much beer.
To translate, though, it is 100% accurate. Like, first draft of Star Wars is about Mace Windu and the Jedi Bendu. So, like, the Bendu is a reference to that. But we were talking in-world canon, which is different, but it's like poetry. It rhymes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, we can't talk.
That
we
joke is getting only yet. Getting better and better, by the way, Ben, it really because is. Your joke is mm-hmm. repeating like poetry now. So it rhymes. It's good. It's this meta joke. I love it.
Okay. Oh, okay. I'm going to star one of these right here. Emma, I know you don't like to speculate all that much, but, you know.
You know what? I don't mind it so much anymore. You've given me like enough exposure therapy.
Oh my God, I love it. Thank you. I just put you under a mind flare for a hot second.
She's like, yeah, scrambled the trauma little, you've exposed me to has created a callus.
You know what? I think that she is actually working for the same person that Moff Gideon was working for. I think that that we're going to see a sliver of the Imperial Remnant that went to the Unknown Regions. So, I mean, I would love to see a Hollow of Rey Sloane, frankly.
I like that.
See, and this is why I don't speculate on the internet.
Power gaze everywhere. Power gaze, power gaze, power gaze.
Yeah.
You know, like, or Brendel Hux, one or the other. It'd be cool to see Brendel Hux in live action. I would like
keep
that.
Keep it to the gaze.
You've seen one ginger, you've seen them all. Like, bring me Rey Sloane.
Hey, Ben, we're reformed over here. No more ginger hate on Pink Milk.
I am just saying that they are recessive gene. If you see one, you may have seen them all because that might be the end of them. I'm only stating scientific facts.
You know what I say? You know what I say? A ginger can recess in me all they want to.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's what people enjoy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is receding.
Into me.
Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Chase.
Yeah.
And also, by the way, Recede Into Me was a Dave Matthews song, so I'm surprised that you didn't get that reference.
Oh.
It's not.
It's like poetry. It rhymes. You should have stayed there.
The song is Crash Into Me, but anyway, sorry.
They can do that to me, too. Any ginger. It's fine. Crash into me. Crash. Under the table, I'm dreaming, and you can crash into me. I think those are the only two Dave Matthews songs I know. Chase, how about you?
One because it was played at a and I was like, heterosexuals are broken.
Are you asking me about Dave Matthews, Brian, or are you asking me about Star Wars?
Yeah, what's your favorite? No. Who do you think Alaya Kane is working for?
I think Moff, I do like this idea that Moff like somehow got out of like this like chaotic state the government's in and was able to kind of sneak away, and that she's still working for him, but he's like really working with Thrawn boy, because I definitely felt those ties just had the Thrawn energy, of course. And I think that, yeah, I think she's still working for Moff, but I like to think that Moff is in contact somehow with Thrawn.
Oh my God. Okay. Yeah. Okay. That is my prediction. This is my, okay. Oh, thank you. I'm so glad I'm not the only one here. Will, I'm assuming we saw the Purgo for a reason. Straight up, 100%. Straight up. Now tell me, are you going to love me forever? Oh, I think so. Opposites
attract. But we might have seen them for a reason that's going to become relevant in the Ahsoka show.
Yeah, I was going to say all roads lead to Ahsoka, so yes, that does not necessarily mean it'll pay off in this series.
I mean, we do need to be careful because Thrawn is a cold-hearted snake, and Ahsoka's going to be forever my girl in animation.
When did Paula Abdul get put into this chat?
I have no idea.
When did she come online?
I don't know. Brian's just making references.
Brian's edible kicked in as well.
Where people just quote Paris is burning for 4 minutes straight.
Which is both irritating, but also can be life affirming depending on the quote.
Touch
and
the
Liam
skin.
Here. Dare I
touch
say Thrawn?
All this
okay.
Skin. See, the one that I got over here are you having a psychological problem in your life?
Yeah.
You can't take it. You are an overgrown orangutan. Like, Venus Extravaganza just plays on my head in the loop. She's my patron mm-hmm. saint.
That makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense.
Okay. Here's my theory. This is my theory, because yes, we know Thrawn is going to be the big bad. We've heard that the Mandoverse is leading into this big movie, yada, yada, yada. I don't normally watch these things like that. I like to stay in story. However, I do think we saw the Purrgil for a reason. We all know Thrawn is coming. That was like a little indicator that Thrawn is coming back, not to the Mandalorian. I think he will come back in Ahsoka. But I do think that Moffin Top Gideon is actually working for Thrawny Boy. And I feel like Thrawn wants to get in front of the Emperor, because Thrawn probably knows about the Final Order and Snoky Snoke and all of that stuff. And I feel that Alaya Kane scrambled up the brains of Dr. Pershing, because he was probably he's probably the number one cloner doctor in the galaxy. So we're going to fry his brain to help hopefully stop the future clones of Palpatine, so that Thrawn can be the ultimate power in the galaxy and sidestep right over Palpatine. And ultimately, we're going to get a war between Snoke / Palpatine and Thrawn. Snoke is going to...
That's spicy.
We started at a 2 and ended up on a 12.
That's a hot... That's
just
a
like Dr. Thing. Pershing started off at a 2 and he ended up at a 12.
Damn. Don't you hate it when they set your headphone to boil? Like
headphones on, world out.
Love it. Yeah. Anyways, that's my prediction. Brian, I think that will be the big crossover.
I love it so much. I love it. I hope it's that.
Don't do that. We're speculating that. Responsibly.
I don't.
So know. As you're saying that, that does also open up the possibility to me that if we're going to insinuate that the entire reason of like the cloning situation that brought about Grogu is eventually to go to Palpatine, try to create himself a perfect clone body. If it turns out that they've actually been working with the Remnant the whole time and not necessarily Thrawn, because I don't know that Thrawn would want to have anything to do with like a crisped up Palpatine. Because there would be that wide open space that he could take over as much as he wanted before Palpatine could even find like a Snoke that had 2 legs and 2 arms. Because it seemed like he was having a hard time with that recipe, which is why the chef.
There was the kill me, kill me.
It was that they looked very basket case. It was a little bit rough.
No one gets that. Someone, yes. Steam
we,
Queen,
we
give me.
We got it. Mm-hmm. We just didn't want it, but we did get it.
Is there no Alien Resurrection fans here?
There are no Alien Resurrection fans.
Jesus fucking Christ. I'm changing my locks. Okay. Here's some of the Steam Queen answers for who Alaya. That's how I'm going to say her name from now on. I'm going to channel I'm going to say only like that. I'm going to channel my Gate Lobot for the Banthaverse. Everyone stay tuned to, if you're not subscribed, go subscribe to Blue Bantha Milk Pod, because Gay Lobot is coming back, everyone. So he'll be here with Alaya. Let me tell y'all, real life IKEA. Hello, Charles. I'm here at the IKEA. I just got myself a latte, and now I'm looking at the pillow covers. That's how long that person entered my life. I heard that. Has lived rent-free in my life for like 15 years. I'm not lying.
He sounds like Buddy Cole's brother.
Oh, my God. It was one of the greatest moments of my entire life. And he was like the old, like, probably 6'2", weighed about 85 pounds, gay guy with Dr. Pershing sunglasses. Like, you could almost see through him. And he was just like in the middle of IKEA. Like, it was you would think he was in like whatever's higher up the needless markups. And he was just like,
He was also
this person on the cell phone. Hello, Charles. I'm here at the IKEA. Does everyone hear me?
Was he not talking on speakerphone? Because like, there is nothing more unhinged than people who are walking around just being like, yeah, and then I told him that he can't come back to the house anymore because after that one time that I got my period, I actually got a UTI. And that was embarrassing because that was the third time that it happened. And he did that to my mom. And you're like, ma'am, just check out the potatoes. Like,
this is 15 years ago. I don't think we had speaker phones 15 years ago. It was on a flip phone.
Or an earpiece. Okay. Was it an earpiece? One of those like...
No,
I love that this man has lived inside your brain for a decade and a half. It's amazing.
And he's never thought of you twice, Brian.
No, oh my god, but it made me so happy.
People are just thinking, I know.
Yeah, I love that age of just like old queen,
yes,
where it's just like they're more Botox than man now. Like they're just barely going around. Everything is through the gnashed teeth.
It was just, I'm like, dude. You're at IKEA. There's nothing fancy about IKEA. This is like bargain basement shopping. I mean, I love IKEA. Don't get me wrong. Like, I am gay. But, like, you are not over here shopping top of the line furniture for your house. It was just, oh, but that was the energy he was serving. Just like a real queen. It's like,
I love that.
This may be Target, but it's actually Target in my house. Oh, God, I loved it.
Those are also the queens who argue about the prices on top of that. Like, you drove up here in a Mercedes-Benz. Do not hold up this line trying to argue for $3 off of that rug. Like, okay, you're fine,
queen. I'm really going to change my locks because that bitch is also probably me.
We're going to have so much fun at a celebration sometime.
Oh, no.
I can't. Maybe if I remember on H&H, y'all can tune back in for Tom's conversation with SiriusXM this week. I'm very proud of him.
Oh, wow.
This is like how the berries slay. We are... thrifty queens over here, and my bitch won against that big evil empire of the SiriusXM. We won!
Yes! Okay. Amazing. I don't really know what that means, but I'm happy.
I have no idea. Those were all words. I understood all the words, not necessarily in that sentence, but okay. I'm excited.
But I'm selling it, right? Hopefully you're
doing
feeling
great.
My excitement.
We're doing
great. Okay. Love it. Absolutely.
I'm in. Like, I want
a little
two
bit
tickets.
More interesting than someone watching it on TV. So.
Oh, calm down.
Oh, I'm calm. Oh, that's the part.
Here's the thing.
Calm.
The episode may
calm.
Have bored you, but at least you got more entertainment than you will from Willow season 2. So. I know, because you're going against my queership. Oh, no, we're not doing that. Like, actually, I think that this drag queen panel is canceled. We're over. Done?
No. Oh my god, it feels so good to be read for filth for like a minute. I mean, no one reads me anymore. I miss it so much. No.
It's true.
I mean, part of it can be like once you've gone through the same
Chase,
picture book so many times,
they
it gets
do.
Boring. But
Chase, let's be real. You get read to filth. They just don't have the balls to show their face. They just hide behind a hood and
yeah,
a gold
but no,
plastic
no,
face.
No, 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 no.
And then
straight
show
people
tunes.
Can't read. As not like
no, but it's
no, actually, you know what, Chase?
Correct.
Chase, this is one of the things I want to talk to you about. Honestly, that person is no longer going to get to me. I literally think they are a drag queen. Like, it is camp, and I think everyone who believes everything they say is a fool. I think they're a fool because I think it's straight up 100% camp, and it's all fake.
I love that.
I got into a hole the other night.
Read by gay people.
Plot twist. It's actually that queen from IKEA 15 years ago because it's all poetry and it rhymes.
Welcome, knights. I'm here broadcasting from the IKEA. Did you see my stacked wine glasses that I got at the drive-in? Oh.
I meant straight.
I feel like I'm in a Star Wars
somewhere. Don't talk
I'm
to me
retired.
Until I've had my Prosecco. You know what I'm saying.
I live in Palm Springs. I'm here in the hot tub right now. It's 6 a.m. and I'm drunk.
My children don't call me that.
Okay, steam queens, I gotta get back to this. We gotta circle back. Okay,
can we give Crystal like a snaps because like I'm so in love.
Okay, real quick, the steam queens are saying that Alaya is working for Gideon. Thrawn, we get first order from Hope. I'm with you. I was watching this episode and watching that woman turn it up to 12 and was like, oh, this is how the first order popped up. Oh my god. Okay, I know M and Ben are here, and we are both, all three of us, are Bloodline fans. What if we get the napkin bombing actually in a show somewhere? I will
Girl,
lose my shit.
Don't put that out into the universe, because it's not going to come to me, and I'm only going to be sad.
Oh God, I love the napkin bomb.
Oh, it's so good.
I love everything about it. It's so good.
You just have to have a really smart director to do it.
The Force Awakens could have done that scene in like 5 minutes. That's how that show could have opened up. That's how, imagine the sequel trilogy opening up with the government being blown up and being called out that she's Darth Vader's daughter. And it just starts right there.
That'd be so baller.
Oh my God, can you imagine? She is, you get a spaceship coming in, like, you know, like, and honestly, like, let's have a Star Destroyer looking thing come in into Coruscant, and then it pans in to the Senate chambers, and she is the daughter of Darth Vader,
and then it's just like,
and blows up. Imagine that starting off that way.
That's like C-SPAN. So you're just going into the, it's like Representative Green from the planet of Florida is here to be like, I want to see her birth certificate.
Oh my God.
Like she says that the Empire was so bad, but what she's not telling you is who her father is.
There would be no Empire if it weren't for her. I like Brian here says New Republic intelligence, which should make them even shadier. I like that. Casty here's Palpatine. I do like I love it. And then there's lots of Thrawns, so I thought I was gonna be alone in my Thrawn, but here we are. Mm-mm. Brian is not nearly as smart as he thinks he is.
Well, you're smart.
Yeah, you're super smart.
Okay, thank you. Also, that sounded about as genuine as my, yeah, I'm really sad that we're not getting a season two also. Jesus Christ. Thank you for sending people over Star Wars Explained, and they have now all left. With things like this, straight people equals illiteracy.
And I didn't mean it. I didn't mean it like that, but yes, that is not exactly how I said it.
I'm just saying that, like, this is just a fact, and if people have a problem with, like, having this conversation, Leah
Michelle.
See, that's the one that I said deserved special snaps. Yeah. That is amazing. That is fantastic. Put that in a frame.
Oh, okay. Any other thoughts before we leave this evening, my friends? You know what, Ben? Thank you for being here. This is the kind of chaos that I feel we have not had for a minute. Yes. Chase.
I do have one thought that I'm glad it's kind of something that everyone's touched on. And you kind of brought it up with like the way sequels could have opened in terms of like government, political, landscape. What I like about this is I'm someone who finds it really, I didn't even grow up, I mean, I didn't watch the sequels until like I watched all Star Wars again at the same time for the first time in a long time. But I do, it has been hard for me to be like super down with the government being super freaking shady. Do you know what I mean? Because you want to think that everything that happens between A New Hope and Return of the Jedi meant something. And it does. But I'm saying, like, as a very political person, it is hard to watch the government be shitty again. And I'm like, you guys, what the fuck was it all for? Like, that is so frustrating. But I'm on two minds about this, because part of me really likes that. And I find it to be very, like, it's like poetry, it rhymes. And then also, like, it is relatable. Like, government, like, a centralized institution of, like, power and government, like, might never work in a perfect way. You know what I mean? And then on top of that, but I mean, on the other side of that, I also don't like it because I'm also like, what about the hope? Do you mean the hope? I have to have hope that there's a government out there that can fucking rule this galaxy. So that's my last thought.
It's Space Denmark.
Okay. Don't know what that means, nope. But I love it.
Oh, Molly. Just finished checking Molly. Back in, girl. It's probably good to check back out.
Go have dessert.
We love you. Go check and make sure that everything's cleaned up.
Go undo your plastic wine from the stack underneath it. And
anything. Go relax. Go watch.
Don't be like Wrecker.
Don't watch this.
You know, I think Chase. Go be like Wrecker
and have dessert.
I think it's really interesting what you just said about sort of the journey that we see government take. And it makes me think about sort of a lot of the themes that we've discussed about the movies and the shows. And I think one of the one of the messages that Star Wars is trying to tell us is that there can be no system that's perfect. Like, systems mm-hmm. will push people into non-ideal positions. You know, sometimes people don't fit the system, or the mm-hmm. system doesn't serve people the way that it should. But at the same time, you know, like I always say, like, anybody can be a hero. Like, mm-hmm. everyone has access to the tools of heroism, to choosing, you know, the greater good, or to choose to be a better person today than they were yesterday, or to choose like connection and intimacy and authenticity over power and control. And yeah, so I think that it's kind of like, that's part of what creates the interesting narrative tension in the Star Wars universe, is it's like this interplay between like the systems that are built and maintained by people and people's individual capacity to be good.
Oh my God, 100%.
I really love that.
And look at this. I love Al here. I think that government always being corrupt is like water being wet. And the great thing about Star Wars is the hope and solidarity. I don't, 100%. It's the thing that I personally have said for the last 3 years on this podcast that I love so much about Star Wars. It's always sad. It's not a happy story ever, but you get lost in the sauce of hopefulness.
Yeah.
And that's what carries you through everything, because life is really flipping hard. Life is always going to be hard. It's never going to be easy. It is rainbows and lollipops it's not going to happen, but we can all want it to be. And that's what carries us through.
It's mm-hmm. so true. Like, it really does mirror the way that life is often discouraging and disappointing. And yet we continue on. We have this instinct for survival, and we have this hope that things can be better. We have these fleeting moments of happiness, and we have like enduring love for the people around us. Right. And I think that, I was just thinking about this while you were talking. About how much value there is in struggle. You know, in some ways, like, sometimes struggle is its own reward, right? It's like things that come easily, we don't value them as much. And things that are the most meaningful and valuable can sometimes be the things that we fought for the hardest. And if the fight hadn't been there, then we might not have, you know, extracted the strength or the meaning from those situations.
And 100%. It's also just from a human point, unfortunately, things working out constantly both don't fit reality but also make very poor storytelling, because at the very end of it is like, if there's no overall, I'm not getting to existentialism here, but let's just say in general in life, I think the only thing that matters is being kind to people, and it's kind of hard to be kind to people if everybody is doing perfectly okay all the time. So if it doesn't mean that those things don't suck, because trust me, my whole last year, but there can be things that you notice during that period of time that will only reaffirm that your belief in humanity, which, and at the end of the day, the belief is actually the only thing that we have. It's not a reality, but if we lose the belief, then we lose everything.
That's really beautiful. 100%.
I love that so much.
To bring some anthropology into this, and, my icon, Jane Goodall, says, we as human beings are constantly striving to end war, right? We all want peace to the world, all of those things. And war is inherently in our DNA. And chimpanzees are a war species. They are our closest living relative, and we will never escape it. Mm-hmm. But what makes us human is constantly trying to defy that inescapable conclusion, and that's what sets us apart from everything. And it's a really sad but true, and also kind of in that, this beautiful thing that maybe one day we will not have that anymore. But, you know, and I think it, I like what you brought up, Chase, too, to circle back to what Ben said earlier about, here we had the original trilogy where the young kids, the radicals, the teenagers, the, you know, the anti-Vietnam kids won. And they got what they wanted, but they were so lost in their idealism and in their youth that they didn't know what to do with it once they won. And that's kind of where the New Republic is struggling. And that's life. That's life, you know? I mean, honestly, you know, I can think about, like, I just think about, honestly, my own life like that. Like, I fought for so long to get married. Like, literally, I mean, I marched on the Capitol. I went and did and then I finally won the ability to get married. Did I get married right away? No, because all of a sudden I was like, oh, I don't want this. And Tom and I were like, not interested in being married. I'm like, what the hell was I fighting for then? But at the same time, it's like, oh, I got it. I didn't actually think I was going to get it. I didn't really think this through, you know?
But also reinforces sometimes the fact that these heroes who are amazing people, like, we love Luke and Leia, and we think that they're amazing people with amazing ideas and who had nothing but good intentions. But at the end of the day, no matter how hard you are trying, you cannot micromanage every one of these systems. Yeah. And even your best attempt is still going to spiral out at some point. Like, no one person can do all of that. And that's the problem. In order for it to have worked, there'd have to be an alternate universe where, like, 500 Leia Organa's got to sit in the office and be like, okay, so this is what we're going to do with the Amnesty Project. But as it is, like, they don't even get to talk to a human. They're talking to a droid. So like, you're stuck with a program just because they're trying to figure out what to do with you, and their intentions are good. Yeah. It's not what the Empire would have done, but that doesn't mean that the outcome is good. Your intentions really do not necessarily affect the outcome.
And I'm back. Was that not a good time? I love Ben. Thank you for joining us again. Ben, you have been on several times now, and we are always all so excited to have you here. I hope you enjoyed watching this or listening to this wherever you may be doing that, whether it's your favorite podcatcher or on YouTube or watching us on the Spotify podcast. While you're here, I would love it if you could leave us some reviews. We are almost at 100 reviews on Apple Podcasts. I'd love it if you could get us there. It would be amazing, especially now that season 3 of Mando is taking off. If you wish you saw this whole live stream but you missed it, and you are curious what we do, you can check out Patreon down below. Check that out, see what we offer there. And anyways, until next week, until you can listen to Tom and I talking about Mando and the Bad Batch, or until next Wednesday when you watch us live, we're all going to be good. We're going be good. And until next time, my friends, let's drink.
Bye.